don't know if Bhakti spoke to you about meeting each person face to face. Did you talk about that, Bhakti? Kim did. So you talked about that, and that's the... I love hugging. But hugging is only the external form of that encounter. The essence of that encounter is always beyond that. And so as I'd like to meet each one and simply look, and that's a strange thing, if you're not comfortable with it, it's fine too. There's a great beauty in looking into the eyes of another person in the state that is free of thought. That is, without sounding too esoteric, there is a transmission of presence in that look that is free of thought, the unconditioned consciousness. It is not one way. Whatever you look upon through stillness, and especially looking at another human being through stillness, that is a transmission of the state that we call presence. And it awakens, in your case it doesn't need awakening because presence is already awakened in you, but it calls forth also from underneath your mind, even if your mind is active at that moment while the other person looking through stillness, it calls forth the unconditioned within you and then strengthens that. It's a two-way process. Shh. But that is not the only way. Presence is transmitted in many, many ways, simply through the field of stillness itself in this room. Presence is even transmitted through words, through sounds, if the sounds arise out of that. Some of that fragrance or energy field of presence is still in the words. We talked about that. So the words have transformational power, not because of what they signify, but because of the space out of which they arise. Presence can be transmitted even through a work of art. Great art arises out of the state of presence. The artist becomes still, and it happens. The greatest works of art were not created by persons, human beings. They always have something sublime there. In form, yes. The form is limited. Every work of art is limited and impermanent. But something within that form still has an energy of that which is beyond form. And that's what makes it into a great work of art. And in some strange way, people can recognize it. And they sense something, but don't know what it is. Presence could be transmitted through touch, so anything can flow into that simple sitting here also. A song, a sound, then those become carriers or simple stillness. And this is now your function more and more in this world. Your function is to be there as the field of presence. One could say you redeem the world, not through thinking I'm doing it, through being the field of presence that does something to whatever and whoever you come into contact with. It lessens the illusion of materiality, of form. Last night you heard the beautiful and sometimes intense sounds and if that didn't stop your mind, then probably nothing will. What? Yes. Would you like to get the microphone?
I made the observation last night that I've made before during bhajans and kirtans, that when the sound gets really loud or very intense, the silence seems to be so much more impregnated.
Yes.
Is there a correlation between the two?
Yes. In a way you could say that's the function of the world. There's the form and there's the formless. And the more noisy it gets out in the world, and some lives are very noisy in many different ways, the more you can sense the stillness. If there were only stillness, there would be no knowing it. So perhaps, and I don't take this to be the truth, it's only sounds coming out of my mouth, so one could say God perhaps seeks to know him, her, itself, and so enters the world of form, identifies with form, disguises itself as form, plays the dream of form, and then wakes up out of the dream of form, and in that waking up, there's a self-knowing. Before you, this is, forget about it now, but this is just a little approximation. It's not the explanation. There is no explanation. And in your life, the two are beautiful. The form, which is noise in one way or another, and stillness. The manifested, the unmanifested. Ultimately, they're one. I'd like you to... Yes, please, another question.
Part of my question you have answered in your previous sentence, still that is bothering me for the last 3 days. The question is, are the presence and the form related? If yes, why blame the form? If no, how can the form exist without the presence?
Okay, can you just... I didn't understand the first... Are the
presence and the form related? If yes, why blame the form? If no, how can the form exist without the presence?
All right, thank you. Yes. they are one. I'm going to talk about myself, what happened. When I was in deep suffering for many years, I only knew myself as the suffering entity. Consciousness was totally identified with the forms, but it was consciousness. Consciousness was appearing in the disguise of forms, thought forms, material forms, a mental form of me. Consciousness appeared in that disguise and only knew itself as that form. And then something happened, and consciousness knew itself suddenly as both within the form and totally beyond the form. Consciousness suddenly knew itself as consciousness. The forms were still there. None other than the appearance, the essence that was in every appearance. So, in both, all that, the difference between what presence means in the way in which we use this term here and in this teaching, because there's no universal meaning, what presence means in this teaching is self-aware awareness. Awareness that knows itself, whereas consciousness embraces the totality. When the totality, when that becomes self-aware, then consciousness becomes presence. But it's all consciousness. So this is the limit to which we can go through words. Further questions may arise if you start thinking about it, but they won't get you any closer to freedom. Thank you. All right, the microphone is traveling there.
Now it's here. I've been to other retreats, or one, New York. And one of the challenges I have when I go home is the desire to sustain the presence that I feel when I'm here. Because I notice people I'm around, a shift in them when I have that higher presence. And then it seems to... And I feel bad about that. What can I do?
Okay. One could say that when you notice that there is loss of presence, there is actually presence again. It's there. It's only when you no longer know that there's loss of presence, then you're lost. As long as the knowing is there, there's presence. It can be very subtle in the background. There's a knowing that you're not present, but in that moment of knowing that you're not present, you're present. Unless it's just a thought, I'm not present, I'm never present. Why can't I ever be present? What's the wrong? But there can be a knowing. There's no presence. Oh, there's presence. The knowing arises out of presence. So, as long as you know you're not present, you're fine. Now, another level of answer, another answer on another level. Use whatever means you have as helpful pointers to presence. And There are many possible means. One of them implies again that you know it. Am I in suffering in any way? Am I immersed in some form of suffering? And suffering can take even impatience, irritation is a minor form of suffering, whatever form it takes. Suffering can be an alarm clock that tells you you've lost the now. Because if you hadn't lost the now, there would be no suffering. There isn't enough space. The now is so small for suffering to arise here in this form. Suffering requires past and future and a me. Just this, a challenge can happen, but no problem. Problem needs past and future and a me that thinks about it and identifies with the situation, has a reactive and personal relationship to this situation. That's a problem. So, suffering, lost the now. Oh, I must have lost the now. Where is it? Oh, here. And the shift happens from mind identification to... At first you may become aware of sense perceptions, suddenly again. Your inner energy field is back. And then you sense the underlying field of awareness. Oh, back. So that's how even suffering can be a pointer, can take you there. And then you can use other things. Open the book occasionally, or any other book that has come out of that state. Read a few lines, and then it's enough very often to be present again. Listen to tapes occasionally. Don't get attached or dependent on anything. Wisdom is required to use help without becoming attached to the form that the help takes. The help is, of course, always pointing beyond the form. Not getting attached to the teacher, the form of the teacher, not getting attached to listening to tapes, not getting attached to books, not getting attached to a photo, and yet being able to use them as openings as long as they're needed. So you can, any photo taken of someone in presence is helpful. Looking at that for brief moments, then put it away. Listening to tapes, not excessively, but occasionally. Nature, use anything natural and bring your attention to anything that is nature, because there is no mind activity in nature. It's an expression of consciousness, but not thought. Anything in nature, and place attention on it, auditory, visually, acknowledge its being. Let it take you into presence. You can do that more easily than a man-made, human-made thing. Most human-made things are mind-made things. Especially in cities, you're surrounded by the externalized human mind in all the forms around you in a city. But even in the middle of a city, you can look at the sky. Or there may be a flower somewhere. So use what you get, but remember, knowing that you're not present, if it doesn't then immediately degenerate into thought, which says, you see, I'm not never present, because that knowing can easily immediately degenerate into thought. From the knowing that you're not present, you can formulate a concept or judgment or thought that says, you see, I've lost it. Not realizing. How do you know you lost it? There was a moment of knowing.
The presence, how strong it feels.
Yes.
And because it seems always be that knowing, the knowing is that it's not as strong.
No.
And then the desire to want it.
But if the knowing is acknowledged, the knowing is suddenly, you notice that there is a knowing, then it deepens by itself.
Thank you.
All right, the microphone is traveling there.
you. Hello?
Yes.
Well, I sent something to you that I woke up 3 o'clock in the morning yesterday before the bells went off, and just some thoughts came into my head, and I wrote them down, and I sent them to you yesterday, and I'd like to read it to you before
okay.
we end the session. I just call it with you. When time has ceased its wheels turning, and that space between the breath of in and out has become my bed, you were there to see me go. A smile so warm, it filled my heart fully, and eyes that would call my soul to play. Your kindness keeping safe the joy I treasured till now, when I become all that ever was joy. Oh, greatness, thanks be, you are my servant of sweetness, my bearer of warm tidings, with wood from the Bodha tree that has carved this space in my heart. For leaving on this day has caused me no sorrow, for you who stayed, that clear bell ringing, this way, this way. Thank you so much for everything.
Oh, thank you. Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Eckhart, could you tell some words about prayer? I am, in my experience, when I am struggle in mainstream and non-acceptance of suffering, I am when I remember that God can do the work that I cannot do it. It put me in an open heart, and I feel like that prayer, to pray God, can be very helpful.
Thank you. For many people, of course, prayer is asking for something or wanting something, but we talk now about a different, a deeper kind of prayer, where you're not making demands, seeking some kind of fulfillment, adding something to me, give me that, give me that. So we talk about a different kind of prayer that is also can be a very powerful pointer that you use for yourself to point to the surrendered state, which is the non-dualistic, the non-dual state. So the dual, which is still exists whenever you pray, there is still a sense of duality between me and God. And I'm not saying do not pray. There is a place for that. The dual can take you into the non-dual. If it is a pointer, so use prayer, mantras also can be helpful. They are, again, only a signpost to take you into that state. Expressions of openness, of surrender, of not demanding. So whatever words come to you, they can take you to the edge. There's a whole book which I like it very much, The Course in Miracles, that was channeled. It is a book of spiritual teaching. And that the whole book, almost the entire book, is written within the dimensions of duality. It's always you address God. You even call God He in that book. This is the old way. God is seen as masculine. And so it has the limitations of all that, the limitations of form. But it, that is not usually what I teach, because this teaching is the non-dual teaching. But for many people it is helpful, for those who feel drawn to it, a text like that It meets you where you are. It comes to you, and you live, inhabit a world of duality, and it starts with a duality of you and God. And gradually, through the lessons, it's a little bit like a psychiatrist who joins the patient instead of rejecting the delusion of the patient and saying, no, you are not Napoleon, this is silly, just get this out of your mind. And then some psychiatrists have tried to accept the reality of the patient and saying, okay, so that's who you are. And then you meet, suddenly there is a meeting. You meet the patient in his delusion. Ultimately, duality of you and God is the last delusion. Beautiful delusion, beautiful. So the psychiatrist joins the patient, and then suddenly they can talk. And from there, it can happen that the psychologist takes the patient by the hand, metaphorically speaking, and they walk out of that delusion together. But first, he had to meet him there. So certain texts or teachings, there are some that seem to move within the realm of duality, only to take you out of it. So they are like the psychiatrist who meets you in the realm of duality in order to reach you. So many people are reached in that way. They would not yet be ready, perhaps, to listen to this teaching. And so they are reached. And at the end of the Course in Miracles, he says, you move into non-duality. Very slowly, very subtly. You move into that. So this teaching, again, is a more direct, non-dual. But if you still need the duality, use that wisely, simply as a pointer, so that... And after prayer, move into the stillness. Whatever prayer it is, let the prayer... Let there be a stillness after the prayer has been uttered. Whatever it may be, let go into stillness from there. And the stillness is the realm of the non-dual. But prayer can point you there. Beautiful. The whole teaching here is a pointer too. So as long as you feel you love it, you need it, you can use that wisely. It's beautiful. And then observe the silence after you have uttered the prayer. So, many still in this world need to be reached in that way, and then they come, and then they are maybe ready to listen to this teaching. And even this teaching, there are certain things that I don't say because it would be meaningless to you. This comes as realization, your own realization. But there's nothing important that here that has been omitted. There's nothing that you need to know that I haven't given you for liberation. Nothing has been withheld as far as liberation, the possibility of liberation is concerned. Absolutely nothing. Now we need to meet those of you, or some of you, face to face as a brief meeting. The way we usually hug is that people come up, we stand face to face, look at each other, and there's a hug. This time, for those of you who want it, others can just stay and sit. It's part of the beautiful meditation. And we're simply here, stand face to face in the sacred encounter, and then at the end I will greet you in this beautiful greeting that is used in India that acknowledges that you are God in your essence, no matter what the outer form is. But before we do that, since we listened to a lot of music yesterday, I'd like to listen to just one more piece of music. And this is interesting. All the devotional music that we listened to yesterday, of course, arose from India with so much spirituality. And now there are things that arise that are devotional and point to the truth that even arise in the West. And that's it's a wonderful thing to see that those things, just as spiritual teachers now are arising in the West, because there is the transformation of consciousness, even beautiful, sacred, devotional songs and music are also arising now in the West. So it's wonderful. We have that. Many of you know it. Sometimes this singer, Kirtana, comes to talks that we have and sings there. And maybe we could just listen before we meet face to face. And this is a meditative listening. Listen to just one song of hers, Kirtana. Many of you may know it, but it's always fresh and new, because everything that comes from there is always fresh and new. Who you really are, if we could just listen to that one song, it's only a few minutes. Who You Really Are by Kirtana. Track 6. Life we call mine.
Then in journey through space, or a storyline, more to life than the body can sense, than the mind can conclude. From experience, is who we are, begin with breath, depend on form, or end with death. Strip away these roles, these names, and tell me what remains. Chance to throw this chance away. it could end at any time. Where is your attention? Where is your prayer? Where is your song? In a fortunate life comes a call to be free from the cycle of bondage. From the dream, we finally realize the truth of one's being before the body dies. So before the final scene is past, see the screen is cast. See what seeing this me and you, and then you will see who. Who you really are. Who you really are. Who you really are.
So now we'll just meet some of you, just brief sacred encounter face to face. Maybe not all of you this morning, and then we'll meet more of you this afternoon. And those who are not yet coming forward or don't want to, don't just be here. In this space, it's enough. I'm going to stand somewhere.